I want to talk to you a little bit about all the different findings that came out of this. And then I want, after that, talk to you about your theory. So one of the things that talked about aluminum wiring, the toxic gas from the contents of the room, inadequate exits because the way the building had been added on and had been added on, and it either wasn't properly inspected or that it was done by inspections that didn't have the most recent code. And you're a former draftsman. Did a lot of that sound like the right thing?
Yes. We know the gases in the back, and we know there weren't enough exits. And what was that first part you said?
Aluminum wiring.
Aluminum wiring. Okay, that's baloney. But let me tell you something. It's baloney, and it isn't, because even in my house, I saw a place where I had copper and aluminum, and the whole area turned gray around that. But that's not what caused the fire. I mean, yes, that can cause, but it's not what caused. It's not what caused the fire. No way.
The other contributing factors that were in the different reports sound legit to you?
Not really. We've been to Frankfurt. We've been all over. The governor wouldn't have anything to do with it. Stanley Chesley told me to shut the F up.
And this was because your belief is?
Mine and Dave Brock and several other people, and one top investigator out of New York is a teacher at John Jay University. It was the middle of the World Trade Center, the middle of all these other ones. He comes here all the time. He knows, too. He knows. And it was set. There's no question.
You believe it's arson?
Oh, there's no question. And they won't listen to us. That's why Stanley told me that. He said the governor was his friend. He's not going to do anything about this. I was supposed to go to the FBI. Why didn't I? Because I live in Alexandria, and one of my best friends, Judy Holliday, who was a waitress in that area, know what happened. They killed her little boy that fall. He found him next spring in her swimming pool. The other girl had to go in hiding for 28 years, Baker, and she went way down eastern Kentucky, drove a school bus, but they had her cell phone number, and they kept calling her, "You better not say a word, nothing." So she came back 28 years later and talked to me. And Dave Brock and I started thinking several years later that it was only our own theory, that somebody had wiped those walls down, shooting back to the showroom to make the fire spread. We almost swore to that. We figured it. And a couple of things about her nose. But she's at my table telling me that these guys working in that room, when she finally went to get the shillings, she saw three people wiping the walls down. Almost fell off my chair.
Who saw them wiping the walls down?
Shirley Baker.
Shirley Baker. And she was?
Shirley Baker was a girl twice. First, her and Judy Holliday were going to work a month earlier. Judy says, "I have to go in the bathroom. Wait here for me." So Shirley standing there, and here's two guys in pinstripe suits talking to the Schilling family at the bar. She could hear them. "You won't sell it to us?" "No, we're not going to sell it to you. Would you be our partner?" "No partner, no." "Well, you're going to be sorry." And on top of that, I know there were some things sent to Rick's ex-wife. I don't know how much some other people know more about that. Their paper things stick to telling stuff. And she found that when she got home too late what was going to happen. But anyway, they wanted to take over, and the Schillings didn't let them. So Shirley Baker heard that. Well, Shirley Baker is the one that was in the room, the waitress that night. She's the one I gave the check to and everything. Well, and Dave Brock, too. He's a busboy. And both of them are trying to get the room ready and all, but here's these two guys in there. And the Schillings never, ever had anybody working on Saturday, and they had fired Rashville Crawford Company the year before, and that's who these people say they were with. But they had light sconces off, sockets, all kind of stuff taken apart and everything. "What are you working on?" "We're working on the air conditioning. Get out of here and don't bother us." The only air conditioner was one vent in the ceiling, period, that came from another room, another area.
You had said earlier you believe that the fire was started in the basement and went up the wall.
Yeah, we have pictures. Dave's got hundreds of pictures in the basement. There are all these different wires, loose wires, sticking into outlets down in there, right under. And then where the beautiful fountain, spiral staircase, the back of that wall, which is a wall from the zebra room, is white lathing between the studs. Well, between the one leading right up to where that sconce where I was standing under was solid, thick black. Okay, the other ones are pure white. So when you go on the other room side of that wall and you see a picture of that from the other side, you can see where that light sconce is, was, is a white burn starting from there out in the, like almost like a circle. That's where it started. Came up into that room.
What is or what was in the basement?
It was a big basement. A lot of storage stuff. Probably some of the old gambling day stuff, maybe. Yeah. But also, they had their meat cutting area, and they used it for a lot of stuff. Laundry, they didn't do laundry, but they kept the dirt, whatever. It was used, well used.
So you made it to the Newport police station that night after you were aware that it looked like the club was empty, but there was just a fire to be put out.
Yeah, about 2 hours later, wasn't much more I could do. And I happened to be in the parking lot. You couldn't get in or out of there. And a guy, he happened to be maybe at that time the Dayton police chief. I'm just not sure, but he ended up with Newport. But he was going out of there. And I said, could you get me out of here? My car was parked up there. So first he took me to his house, and I called my family. I said, I'm okay, because they were all around crying. And then he took me to the Newport police thing, and they had a little bitty jail cell in there. And they had this guy in there. And he wasn't an American guy, whatever he was. But the one cop hit his arm through, hit this guy. I said, what did he do? He said, he was going through the bodies up there, looting. And by the way, there was a time, thinking I asked the busboy, told the busboy, would you kind of watch over these bodies? I didn't know any of that happened, you know, kind of watch over them. And that's what he had done. And so, yes, I was at the, and then when I'm there, it was kind of high up a little bit where it's at. And I said, what is that over there? That's a Duro paper bag company burning.
So, right, it burned the same night.
It burned the same night.
So you get home, and did you turn on the TV? Because it was all over TV.
I probably did. I'm not sure, but the next day, there were people at my house interviewing me.
I was there the next day to cover the post-fire scene, and I know ABC News was there, and it was like their lead story on the news that evening. And most of the networks and the major newspapers had sent people in to write about it. A couple of years later, within the whole place was leveled.
Yeah, it's completely leveled off. And now there's trees up there that are 40, 50 feet high where the stage was.
But there's a memorial. Is it up there at the top of the hill or is it down at the...
I built a memorial up there with help, a lot of help from volunteers. And it is up all the way back to where the top of the expressway, I-471, was built. And there's a fence, an expressway fence that you have on the other. We did that on the other side. All the people on it try to say it was their thing and they're going to tear it down, but they better not. And you go behind, back through the garden. You can. There's a trail going back there that you can go back. It says don't, but people do. So you get back, and then there's that, where that little wall was back there, and you go over that, and it's still about another 50, 60 feet back to our memorial. It's high up over 471, and it's very windy up there. So I've had crosses come down. I have flagpoles come down.
The original design was a monument with a statue on it?
Yeah, well, that statue wasn't there originally. Some guy just came in and just started doing a lot of this. But we built an arch out of the bricks. First off, we sold bricks for $40 that were monogrammed by Rolf Monument. They were, you know, very neatly.
Right.
And that money was for us to build a memorial. So it was a little fun for that. So we did that. But here's the story. When I was doing the first cross by myself, 2-inch PVC pipe, kept breaking, it wouldn't go up. And I got mad, and I said, look, God, I'm trying to build a cross here. If you want it here, that's great. You'll help me. If not, let's just forget about it. I walked about 50 or 60 feet, and I saw a piece of gutter pipe. Like, wait a minute. I put it on there, up went the cross. So you tell me. I don't know. But anyway, they kept going down. Well, we've got them in there secured. We got a 35-foot-high cross. We've kept making bigger, and it's secured. Then this man that was helping us, he's a rogue scholar, very smart. He built a beautiful statue of Christ up there, like just like it's in Rio. It's not that big, but it's pretty good size. And I put white picket fence and a flag. And
there's also a flagpole that you're going to redo?
Doing it right now, yeah. The other one, we've had problems with it, but this one should be okay. It's going to be about 33 feet high, and I'm going to put that up there shortly.
And so the rest of the property, there's a driveway that comes up, which was the driveway up to the parking lot in the club.
Yeah, and it's just been cleared off by the gas and electric company because they went up and cleaned the whole, there's wires go across, and they've cleaned that whole area out.
But that land was never redeveloped or redone for any other purpose?
Mm-mm, no. It may be up for sale. I'm not sure about that. But no, nothing's happened up there.
Is there anything down at the entranceway where the old sign was?
Yeah, that same man that did the cross up there, he built a smaller thing down there. And then also Robin Caraway, she wrote a book and stuff about the Beverly. She's put a marker there. We had a nice christening of that some time back.
So every year, or almost every year, come Memorial Day weekend, there's been a memorial service or remembrance service?
Yeah, we've had several of them. One at St. Mary's Church. That was quite nice. And several others. But now the 40th anniversary is coming up. This is still the worst fire in America in the last 73 years since the Hartford Circus fire killed two more. But yeah, this May, I believe on the 28th, which is the day, I think it's from 6 to 9, we will have a service, and I'll meet with people, and Dave will meet with people, and we have a lot of bricks that we still have from that are not monogrammed. I think I'll have them there. If people want one, they can have one.
And where are you going to do this service? At the memorial on the hill?
Well, it's going to be at the bottom, but probably they'll be going up.
Okay.
We have to see what happens. Last year, we had something. A lot of people were there.
And the person who organizes is Dave?
Well, I would usually do it. And I made a mistake that we're going to be going to Ireland. And we won't be back till the 24th or 25th. So I said, Dave, you got to do it this year. You know, I can't do it. So they're doing it.
And his name is Dave?
Dave Brock.
Dave Brock. And he was
a bus boy right in the middle of the thing, yeah. He started working there when he was 13 years old.
So he's one of the keepers of the flame, too, for the memorial service?
Yeah. Yeah, he's right in the middle of that. And he's got a couple friends that do that with him, too.
When you've had these memorial services,
yes.
Are there many survivors, many people like yourself who either work there or were there that come?
Yeah, they come, yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, they do. We had one in the parking lot down at the bottom. It was really nice, and with music, and it's nice. And what I like to do, and I can't do it this year, I don't think, but Larry Vincent worked there in the bar. He was a singer, you know, mm-hmm. And he was a songwriter. He wrote a song, and I have a recording of it from a beautiful singer from Belgium. It's I Lost My Lover on the Hilltop. It's beautiful, and I think maybe he's thinking about that.
Do you read the names of the 165?
We have. One time I had the girl that was laying under the tablecloth I told you about. Her son read a small service we had one time up across from the Newport Shopping Center up at a church up there. And he read the names off, and I stood there, and he was kind of nervous.
Do you think there'll ever be another Beverly Hills-like club for this area?
No, I don't think so because of what happened there.
Before you worked there, had you been to the club or had been there to see any of the entertainers?
I did, yes. My brother was a waiter there, and I went with his wife one night to a show. And I don't know if I was still in the Navy or not, but that was basically the only time that I did that. And I did meet my wife there. She was a Radio City Rockette, and she was in her dancing. And we met in June of 1958 and got married in January 1959.
So she was a chorus girl at the Beverly Hills Club?
Yes, uh-huh. She was.
In its later incarnation in the 70s, was there chorus girls too, or just,
no,
just headline
shows,
entertainers?
Headline entertainers. One night, Sal Mineo, who was an actor, he was there with a bunch of people. They were doing a movie somewhere. And they had come back in the back. This is in the gambling days, earlier, and then they went out and were sitting by the stage. Well, then he sees me up on the stage. He says, man, this guy's everywhere. But it was just a funny thing.
I think Shirley MacLaine was there, too.
She sure was. Yes, she was. I had her autograph on the baseball, too.
Well, I know that there was a movie shot over in Madison, Indiana.
Right, Some Came Running.
Some Came Running, and many of those people came to the Beverly Hills.
Three or four nights in a row they were there. And then Earl Flynn was there. A couple nights, he looked like he owned the place. But people, they'd come there.
Well, the one thing I remember, too, was that with that club and with the, I guess at that point, the Bob Braun Show, that an entertainer could hit the Bob Braun Show, reach many cities, sell a lot of tickets for their dinner club appearance. And the dinner club, you know, it was a nice relationship between the two, that there was a lot of star power coming to this community that just doesn't happen anymore.
I'm dealing cards one night to a lady, and where are you from? I talk to people, whatever, Seattle or somewhere out there. And why are you here? She said, because of this place here, we have our conventions here every year. We wouldn't miss it. And then what happened was after the fire and all, the Shillings had some other places and whatever, and they finally ended up down near Memphis. I forget the name of the place, Mississippi. And they dug it out, and they put a casino in there, and I think they made a lot of money on it. Now it's a big area of casinos there.
I just want to back you up here. You grew up in what part of Northern Kentucky?
I was raised on Kyle's Lane. No, we moved after I got in the Navy in 57. We moved to Park Hills, but I was on the corner of Kyle's Lane and Henry Clay, big old stucco house there. That's where I was raised.
And what high school?
Dixie.
Class of 50?
Class of 54, but I went in the Navy in 54, and I actually graduated with 55, but I do all the stuff with 54. Talking about Kyle's Lane, now at the bottom of Kyle's Lane is Walt's Hitching Post. And when I was a kid, across the street from there, on the same side, was they built a nightclub there. I can't think of the name of the place, but it was a big block nightclub. Maybe it's called the Chez Paris, maybe. But anyway, it burned down. They built it back, and I think it burned down again. Well, I know why that is. They were doing good, and they didn't sell. That's what happened. It happened many, many, many times, and that's what happened at Beverly Hills.
Is there much Beverly Hills memorabilia, like poker chips, menus, that you ever see?
Well, there's a guy in Newport. I don't know if he's still there or not. He had a lot of stuff, just in a little shop on the corner. But Dave's got some stuff. I've got some stuff. But you don't see too much of it around. I volunteer at the aquarium, and they have Naughty Night every year, and they auction stuff off, you know. Several years in a row, I've taken either a bowl or a dish or whatever there, mm-hmm. and they've gotten good money for it. Last year, what I took, I forget what it was, they got $150 for it.
You showed me when you came in the studio a menu.
Yeah, I have the menu cover.
Singed,
yes. Mm-hmm. I have other stuff at home that's singed from that.
Was that from the next day when you were up there?
Somewhere along the line after I picked it up. There's not much stuff left anymore, but yeah.
And you wrote a book. The name of it is?
Inside the Beverly Hills Supper Club Fire. But on the cover it says Ron Elliott, but I wrote it. Still getting a few royalty checks, and it's been out for over 20 years.
It's also in paperback, too?
It's in paperback now. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Inside the Beverly Hills Supper Club Bar.
And is it available?
Yeah, well, you get on the internet. You can get it at Amazon or those places. And I just saw it on from Australia. I've seen it several times on from Australia. Their money must be different than ours because they're asking $85 for it. And it's not worth that much.
Was he your co-writer on it?
Yeah, I wrote it. And they said, well, you're not a writer. So they had a man, and he rewrote it.
Right.
He and I have seen some differences on it, but I had okay the final. And then the guy that was one of the guys in charge there came to my house for dinner one night, and I was able to add about 10 or 12 more pages on that they had cut out. It's got 280 pages and 60 pictures.
Do you wake up sometimes and say, God, it's been 40 years?
Yes, I do. I don't really wake up, but it's always on my mind. It's there. As you heard me talk, it's like if it was yesterday. I just wished that it hadn't happened. And that's all I talk about when I talk to people, because the reason I do that is everybody knows that fire, and then they kind of know a little bit about me. I guess they say when you talk about things, it makes it easier. Some people can't. They keep it inside of them.
Well, I sure thank you for joining us tonight for this. I've interviewed many people in my 40 years in the business, and you're memory of detail and time and place and accounts has just been wonderful. I thank you for sharing them with us tonight.
It's my pleasure, John. I appreciate it.